This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under the Resources menu or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at a business seminar held on February 17, 2026 in Arthur, Illinois.
Good afternoon, all of you. Thank you for being here today, and it's always an honor to me to be asked to speak to a group of leaders as yourself. So for our topic today and concerning partnerships, it is, of course, all that I ever knew. I grew up in a partnership and been enjoying that all my working life so far. So in preparing to speak today, I had to reflect, of course, on my experience in partnerships. So when I was 20 years old, in 1988, I was the owner of 800 shares of Hostetler Wood stock, and I was $27,000 in debt to my grandpa. So that's how it started for me. It's been a blessing to me to have been in business with my grandfather, my father, my four brothers, and of course now the fourth generation, which includes nieces, nephews, and also my sons. Now, what I'm about to tell you today is, of course, just my opinion. And there's other ways to do partnerships, I'm sure. And also, I want you to know that we don't think that partnerships are the only way to have a business. There's a lot of sole proprietors here, I'm sure. That's great. My hat's off to you. It's been one of the things that I have really enjoyed about being in a partnership is what it has allowed me to do. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that later. So who is a partnership is ideal for some people, but not necessarily for everybody. So who should be in a partnership? So partnerships are for people who don't necessarily want the responsibility of managing a company or a business alone by themselves. And this is at least partially true about me, even though I often overestimate my own abilities and get myself into trouble that way. But then it's nice if you have a couple of brothers or some nieces and nephews to help you out. And that can be deadlines, that can be whatever. So partnerships are also for people who don't have the ability to do it alone. There are some people who would never attempt to run a business by themselves that make excellent partners. So you may be a good manager, a salesman, whatever, accountant. You may be a good mechanic. But you're not likely to be all of those. And if you think you are all of those, you're probably also pretty good at deception. In our family, there's a great diversity of interests and talents. And that's one of the strengths that we enjoy in our company, is that not everybody wants to do the same thing, which is good. Partnerships are also for people who want the shared experience of business with their family. For some people, that's not important. For my grandfather and father, that was very important. Dad wanted his sons to experience business with him. My father's still living, and he's elderly, and he's been retired for 17 years now. So What I want to point out here is my dad knew that he would not make a very good businessman by himself. But he had a vision of having a business with his family. So my grandfather and father started the business together when we were really young. And then as we got up to working age, we, of course, worked in the shop. And when we turned 20 or 21, we would be invited to become partners. We boys already had a lot of the responsibility of actually running the company. I remember one time we had two buildings, and one day a person showed up to pick up some product, and we boys were working in the one building. We had a few employees. So he kind of stuck his head in the door and he looked around a little bit, and before my brother could go talk to him, he left again, went over to the other building and talked to one of our employees, and our employee said, "Well, you need to go over and talk to the boys over in the other shop." He said, "Well, I looked in there and there's nothing there but some young boys. He's not sure who he's supposed to talk to." So that's kind of the way it was when we started out. Anyway, so what I'm trying to point out here is Dad was very good at getting us involved, and that paid off. And he also realized that if you have skin in the game, that helps with responsibility too. So partnerships are not for everybody. Partnerships are not for people who are a one-man show. Now, some people want to do it themselves, and that's fine. We're not, like I said, we're not against sole proprietor companies. As a matter of fact, I think sole proprietors that I have met are some of the most interesting people. And this is kind of the way I like to look at it. Some of these people are a one-man show, but they're a good show. And I really enjoy those people. Learned a lot from them. But that's not me. It's not what I would want to do. Partnerships are also not for people who think they're always right. Some people are always right, even if they're wrong. And you know what? Working with your brothers, they will definitely let you know if you're wrong. There's no doubt about that. So you're not getting away with that. If you're wrong, you will find out. Partnerships are also not for people who don't really like to share an office with an equal, with a person who has equal authority or equal status in the company. But that's the way it is in our office. There's lots of people who are equal. Lots of people who are equal. While I don't work in the office full time, I have some office responsibilities, but I have a couple of brothers who work in the office. But in our company, each partner has really the same amount of say. You have one vote. That's basically what you have. Every partner has one vote. The other thing, for some people, the lines of authority have to be very well defined. In other words, and that's not all bad, but they want to know exactly where they stand and what's their authority, what their responsibility and authority is. And they also are very protective of that. Well, in our company, the lines of authority are a little bit more blurred and a little bit more flexible. But there's one thing that's pretty fixed, and that is decisions are made by those who show up. And if you are not present, your vote does not count. So you have to be present in order to help make the decision. So today, I am not consulted by what's going on at home. And that's fine. I trust them 100%. Partnerships are also not very good for people who are trying to gain as much personal wealth as possible. If you have a problem sharing your worldly goods with others, it's probably not a good idea for you. But partnerships are a really good way to help the next generation generate wealth or pay off their home. A better way to put it would be to give the next generation the ability to be successful. Partnerships are really good for that. There's two things that I would like to point out that you should remember about a partnership if you are thinking about entering one, and that is that the partners should have similar or same values and convictions. So in other words, because that shows up, as we have heard in several of the topics today, values are pretty important. And if you're not in agreement as to what the values or the mission statement or the vision is for your company, then you should probably not enter into that partnership. So it's not wrong for the partnership to be diverse in its members, but the values and the vision have to be agreed upon. But it is definitely best if the partners share similar conviction. Some of the benefits of a partnership are that it's less stressful. At least for me, it is. So when I have areas of responsibility in our companies. So when I face decisions that are worrisome to me or that I'm not sure what to do, I have a multitude of counsel built in. One thing I like about that is I can ask my brothers, my nephews, whoever, for their opinion, and they will give me their opinion honestly. But they will still say, you're going to have to decide. And that's fine. I still value their opinion. And remember, nobody sets you straight like your brother. And most of you probably have brothers and know that. It is also less demanding on your time when your family really needs you. And that was great. Like when we were young, it was less demanding on our personal time. So, when I say less demanding, I would say my wife would probably say I spent a lot of time at work in the time when we had young children, and that's true. But I also had the opportunity of taking my children along to work a lot, and they still talk about that. Our children are growing now, of course. So you probably notice that most of us who are in business like to talk to other people about business, just in general. And some people get together just for that purpose. Well, we as partners have that opportunity every day, and I really enjoy that. We can talk about business or about other things in general, but we talk a lot about business. In our partnership, we as brothers, and of course in the fourth generation, there's lots of diversity in our friends and our connections socially. So that has been very interesting And when you are partners with somebody, you get to know their friends, you get to know who they hang out with. And like for us brothers, of course, that overlaps a lot. But in the next generation, that has been very interesting. And you get to form a lot of beneficial connections through your partners, which I like. So let's get to the heart of a partnership a little bit. So there's some things that are pretty important if you want a long-term partnership. And it could be, you have to be intentional, plan ahead. Matthew 6 says we're not to worry about tomorrow, what we will eat or what we'll wear. However, I don't think planning ahead is wrong. I think planning ahead is acceptable. So in a partnership, there should be articles of organization and an operating agreement at the minimum. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. So in the articles of organization, you should make very clear the name, address, and purpose of the partnership. Now that sounds maybe kind of silly, but I've talked to a lot of people about partnerships, and there's quite a few people out there who entered into partnerships that didn't get what they thought they were getting when they entered into a partnership. So the articles of organization should spell out specifically what this partnership includes, whether what the partnership owns, is it the real estate, is it the equipment, what all is in this partnership. In other words, when you buy a share or shares in the partnership, you want to know what you're getting. So that should be pretty clear. So articles of organization should also include a measurable form of what am I buying. So you're buying 100 shares. Well, how many shares are there total? So you need to establish a measure of ownership, percentages or shares or some other unit. Our partnerships, and when I say partnerships, let me just clarify that. So Hostetler Woods started in 1973. That is the primary partnership. In 1984, we started building chairs, and that's a company known as HW Chair. It is a separate company originally owned by the same partners. Right now, some of the fourth generation owners own only shares in one company, and some other fourth generation owners own shares in the other company. So the third partnership that I am a partner in is called Tiverton Timber, and it is a woodland real estate holding company that owns woodland for timber production that we utilize for our raw material. Just to clarify, when I say partnerships, that's what I'm talking about. So each of our partnerships has 10,000 shares. So if you own 100 shares, you know, that way you know what you're getting. If you own 100 shares, that would be 1%. So you should also establish who can be an owner. In other words, you're becoming an owner here. Well, who are the other potential people you are going to be end up being owners with? Now, in our partnerships, when you become an owner, you have voting rights, and then you have say in who else can become an owner. But you don't have sole say. In other words, you have to have a majority vote. So what you're getting here is that's lots of details that you should actually take care of before somewhere in the early years of your partnership. So who can be an owner? In our case, it is a lineal descendant of my father that can be owners. So my sister was an owner at one time. My nieces can be owners, my nephews. But it of course expands going forward. Anyway, that's the way our article of organization reads. You should also set a minimum age of becoming a partner and also a maximum age of buying in. And in my opinion, you should probably also have a maximum age for a partner. In other words, a required retirement age. Some other requirements in our partnerships are that you need to work at the company. It needs to be your employment. You can't be an absentee owner. You can do community service or whatever else. You can take some years off and go into the mission field. That's completely fine. But you can't be employed somewhere else. One thing I would like to point out here is if you want your sons or your grandsons to become partners with you, don't come home in the evening complaining about your work. In other words, if you are not happy with what you're doing at work, why would your son or your grandson want to become a partner? That's one thing that we learned early on was that our business was supposed to be enjoyable. Consequently, it was not driven to the max. And we were oftentimes viewed as a company that was kind of, you know, a little bit too relaxed in our management and employment practices. And I'm not saying we weren't. But the reason for that was it was supposed to be enjoyable. I see I skipped a few slides here, but articles of organization should also include a method of passing the business on to the next generation. In other words, how is the business going to be sold to the next generation? How are the shares going to be valued? How are you going to come up with a price? I'm going to talk a little bit more about that later. You should also include some of the conflict resolution part of to address things that can happen in business. So one of the things in our articles of organization are that you cannot encumber the shares, like using them for collateral for a loan. You're not allowed to do that. I'm not saying that you have to have that, but in our companies, that's only the company can use the assets for collateral, in spite of the fact that the assets are really owned by the individual owners. So who gets to vote on the issues? Like I said, each partner has equal say. How about conflict resolution? If there's a disagreement and it is in my area of responsibility, I am responsible to have a meeting with the members and find a resolution for that conflict. If it is in one of my brother's areas of responsibility, he is in charge of resolving the conflict. You also should address things like, what about if one of the partners decides to leave hostily? In other words, leaving to compete. Or what about forcing a buyout or forcing a sellout? Or what about the death of one of the partners? So agreeing ahead of time to the answers of those questions ensures that you're not going to have conflict in the times when you really, when things are emotionally charged. So the answers are already, the answers to those questions should be at least somewhat defined. So now let's talk about the operating agreement. The operating agreement should describe some of the manager's responsibilities in elections. So in our companies, we have one elected position, and that is, and it is the only titled position, and it is general manager. Again, there's lots of ways to do this, but the general manager's responsibility is mostly legal. He signs the papers. He is responsible to make sure that the taxes are filed and paid, legally responsible for those things. He is also responsible to chair the shareholder meetings. So we like to have monthly meetings. Any partner can call a meeting. And we don't necessarily have a meeting every month if, for some reason, it doesn't work out. But there is a meeting scheduled every month. And in this meeting, we have a kind of a cut-and-dried agenda of things that we discuss, and I am allowed to give a report or asked to give a report on my areas of responsibility. So the manager's responsibilities in elections, when I say election, so several of us, third generation, have served as general manager. So when my father retired, I was the first of the third generation to serve as general manager, and it was primarily because that I had been helping my father with his duties. And so I was kind of the one that was in position to actually do it, even though it didn't fit well with the rest of my responsibilities, which are maintenance and engineering, and it kind of interfered a little bit. So the first order of business for me was to shuffle responsibilities around until I had one of my brothers free so that he could be the general manager. It took me 7 years to do it, but I got it done. Worked myself out of a job. So, yeah, so now we vote annually on that, just to make sure that the general manager knows that he can be replaced if we choose to. The other thing that probably should be talked about is owner compensation and distribution of profits. So owner compensation, and we are a little bit unique in this respect, even though we have, right now we have, I think, 12 partners, and they are from two different generations, third and fourth. We all get paid exactly the same. We get a salary that's exactly the same. And this is a salary that we would be willing to pay a person that has our responsibility. Now, I will say that some of the more junior members have less responsibilities than some of us more senior members. But they probably need the money worse than we do. So, I'm not saying it's fair, but it doesn't have to be fair. That's what we agreed on, and that's the way it is. I'm totally fine with it. The other The other form of compensation is through a form of a dividend, which is distributed on a per share basis. So if you own 100 shares, you get half as much as a person that owns 200 shares. Talk a little bit about business succession. So the reason that you should think about business succession is because mortality is 100%. And you are not going to make it. You will someday die. Now, I admit that you don't have to plan for business succession. You really don't have to. You can leave your office on a stretcher or in a box, whichever way. But I will say this, if you want something to say to it, to what happens, and you can write anything in your will you want to, but if you really want something to say to what happens to your company, you need to do it while you're alive. That's why it's important. If it is important to you, what happens to your company, you should plan it and execute it, not just plan it. A partnership is a very effective way to position the next generation for success in business. And by planning, you can help them. You can help the following generations be successful. And the interesting thing is, they will make you more successful. Now, how can that work? So there's lots of people who think that if you take a pie and you cut it into four pieces, the pieces will be twice as big as if you cut it into eight pieces. Well, we have found in our partnership that when you add partners, the pie just gets bigger. So one of the benefits of having new partners is that they bring new energy and new ideas into your company in ways that employees can't or don't. So we have found that when we add partners, it adds to our companies. And it makes for a more stable and more profitable company. Because you have another person that actually has skin in the game. In other words, we are using my money, so we will put in more effort. It's that simple. I'm going to try to describe a little bit about how it worked for us. So our partnership originally started in 1973 by what we call the first and second generation, which was my grandfather and father, and it was a 51-49 partnership. My father owned 51% and grandpa owned 49%. When I think back, it seemed like a long time where it was just my grandfather and father. But it really wasn't. It was actually a relatively short time. But for a young boy, it seemed like a long time. So the third generation became partners in the 80s and 90s. So, at that time, you can see that the second generation owned a larger share. At that time, my father felt that he needed to own a larger share because he kind of wanted to just to make sure that this was actually going to work. And probably the other reason was we boys didn't have any money anyway, so kind of made sense. But he soon figured out that that wasn't the best idea. My grandfather was reluctant to sell his shares. Now, you have to remember that Grandpa was born in 1908, and he was young married in the Depression, and he had a really rough time. Basically came to Ohio. He was not born and raised in Ohio, but he came to Ohio broke. Worked for his brother. And when I say we, I'm talking about the third generation, we would always say Grandma and Grandpa never made it out of Depression. They always thought that they were just at the brink of not making it, even though they had plenty of money. It was a mindset that never left them. And Grandpa would always say, you know what, I'm concerned that there's going to be another depression. And he had lots of good stories about the depression and heartbreaking stories also. But Grandpa finally agreed to sell when he was 80 years old. And in order to get him to do that, we agreed to pay him a lifelong pension, which is probably wise on his part because he lived to be 95. Anyway, I had a great grandpa, I will say that. And my dad, of course, had the burden of convincing him to sell. And so my dad, who was 30 years younger, so he would have been 50, which seemed a lot older then than it is does now. But anyway, my dad said, I am not going to act like that. But you know, time flies. And so in 08, New Year's of 08, and we were not expecting this. Dad said, this year I'm turning 70, and I want to sell out to you. And he still owned about 16% at that time. Because you will see here that when Grandpa sold out, the second and third generation became equal partners. That would have been from 88, let's see, Grandpa, from 88 into the 90s, sometime in that time period, we became equal partners. And we didn't really think too much about the next generation because, like, my oldest nephews were really young. But then, when the 2000s, by the time my dad was getting to retirement age, he became really concerned about that. What about the fourth generation? And he wanted to talk about that, but we were not sure what his intentions were. But like I said, in 08, he said, I want to sell out this year. So we got the ball rolling. We boys knew that, okay, Dad's willing to sell right now. And he was still of a very good, sound mind at that time. So we bought him out. So for a very short period of time, the third generation owned all of it. For a very short time. And so here's one thing that I like about the way we transfer these shares. So we bought out Dad. And about halfway through the year, about July of 2008, it was all set and done and over. And we all at once we realized that our employees and our customers never realized what was going on. Because Dad was still there every day. He still had his responsibilities he was taking care of, but he was no longer an owner. And they didn't realize that we had actually bought him out until we told them. So we had at our company picnic, we told the employees that we had bought Dad out at effective New Year's. Anyway, So that's one of the good things about having a gradual change of ownership. But for a very short period of time, and then the fourth generation showed it started when the second generation retired, the third owned all of it, and then the fourth generation showed up from 2008 to 2026. So a lot of stuff happened. And I'm going to try to describe a little bit. So here's what we do. So we third generation owners sell our shares to the fourth generation. We finance it. They pay us. And so we have less shares. They have more. There's still 10,000. So one of the critical things here is that in your partnership agreement that you have a method that you have agreed upon to determine the value of your shares. It's pretty complicated. So we hired somebody to do it in the beginning, but now we have a spreadsheet that we enter every year's results in, and it spits out a share value. It is weighted. We look at 5 years, the last 5 years, and it is weighted, meaning the current year, the immediate past year has five times the weight than 5 years ago. Not going to talk much about that, because it's really complicated for me anyway. Partnerships are a good tool for teaching the next generation stewardship. And that was really brought out to me when I was giving a guy a tour of our facilities. We went to several of our facilities. We were at one of our tree farms. And during this tour, I had introduced him to, I think, all of my brothers and a lot of the fourth generation owners. But I had not introduced them as owners or partners. I had just introduced them as, this is my brother Ivan. Anyway, so at the conclusion of the tour, he said he's kind of curious, and I had not told him that I was a partner either. He said he would be interested to meet the owner. I told him you met most of them, and he was like, well, which one? I said, well, there's lots of them, and I am one of them. And he was like, so you own this? I was like, that's kind of a different question. Do I own this? And I told him, no, I don't own this. This facility is owned by Hostetler Wood. Now, I own some share in Hostetler Wood. Yeah, he was kind of taken aback about that. And it got me to thinking. So if you would ask, I'd be pretty confident in saying if you would ask our partners, if you would just show up and ask you, are you an owner here? They would say, I own share in this company. And I think that's a good way to teach responsibility in stewardship. In conclusion, I don't know how it is for you, but for me, you know, you go through life and you do the things you're responsible for, and you know it. You're not exactly shaking up the world. Well, today, I was given the opportunity to speak to all of you, and I look at you as leaders because you are responsible for people, for things. So hopefully, I have influenced some of you for the better. Now, I can't make you change anything, and I'm not going to try to. But you can choose to change things about yourself and about your company and in the way that you do business. And that has an effect on your family, your church, your community, and in a larger sense, also the world. I'm going to conclude with that. I would just wish you all God's grace and blessing. Thank you for your attention.